Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. I'm John Gibson. I'm with me on a cold Saturday. What is this, morning? Late night? What do you want to call it? Middle of the night? It's Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy? How you doing? You staying
warm?
Well,
it's Sunday. Yeah, well, it's early Sunday morning.
Early Sunday morning, we'll call it. Yeah, very.
Indeed,
very...
I am warm. I got the furnace going here. Good. I'm nice and comfy. How about you?
Well, you know, just like partly cloudy, I'm partly warm.
Okay. I'm gonna give you a pass on that.
Okay. That won't
meaning what the heck?
We will not get into the parts, but yeah, okay.
Indeed. Probably best left unsaid. So how you doing, man?
All right, hanging in there.
Cool.
On this week's show, we have an interview with Matt Clark, the former Dragons and Buffaloes infielder. We're going to talk about the Hall of Fame inductees, camp opening, and more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I sat down with Matt Clark, and we had a phone chat on Thursday. And like I said, he played with the Dragons 2013. He made his way back to Japan last year to play with the Buffaloes. Mm-hmm. He's staying in shape right now at the moment, and it's so funny because in the talk, I think we discussed the fact that Mark Trumbo, the guy who led the American League in home runs last year, had not signed as a free agent yet, but actually he signed the day after we had our conversation. So hopefully the dominoes will start falling now, and then they will eventually get to Matt, and we'll figure out where he's going to be playing this year. But he's a free agent right now with no destination. He talks about some of the places that he might end up, but he's really interested in coming back to Japan.
Not a surprise there.
Even though he had that terrible experience with the Orioles last year.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's only Oryx. I don't mean that in a bad way, but I'm saying that, you know, that means, okay, Chunichi, he's done that, and Oryx, he's done that. So there's 10 other teams. And, you know, we'll see how that works, but of course everybody wants to come back. I want to hear the guy says, "Nah, Japan. Nah, I don't think so. I know they want me to play, and I know they want to give me a lot of money.
Those
guys, Jim,
won't sit down and do an interview with us. Nobody wants to put that on tape. Anyway,
among other reasons.
Yeah, maybe for other reasons too. So anyway, Matt's 30 years old. He's married now. He's living in Houston, and we had a really interesting chat. So let's take a listen.
All right, joining us for the first time in a long time is Matt Clark, and we appreciate him waking up in the morning and talking to us. Thank you very much, buddy.
Morning. How's it going?
Yeah, doing all right. All right. So you're former Dragons and Buffaloes infielder. How often do you get asked about NPB when people discover that you actually played in Japan?
Oh, man. I don't come out and say that I played there right away, but as soon as I find out, that's like their first go-to. Especially the older guys that I play with that are starting to get towards the mid to late 20s, early 30s, they all ask me about it. I really tell them, I was like, it's an experience, and I, for one, I loved it. It just all depends on how you play and if you can adapt to the culture, and that's basically like the two main things. If you can adjust yourself, you'll be fine, but a lot of guys have a lot of problems with it, but I don't think I was one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I watched your career. I mean, obviously, you have like 25 home runs that first year with the Dragons, 70 odd RBIs, and it looked like you were doing okay. I mean, I noticed your splits before that you had hit better off of left-handers when you played with them than you did off of right-handers, but, you know, I was wondering about that because it seemed like you had more at-bats in your year with the Dragons in the first half of the season, and then they kind of tapered off in the second half. What happened there?
Oh, yeah, I mean, you know how it goes in MVP. It's like, if you're hot, they'll play you. Sometimes they won't. It's kind of like you just kind of wait your turn and try and get your at-bats and do well when you can. But you get your ups and downs in the season, so they kind of tapered my swing and my at-bats here and tapered my at-bats there. And then once I finally really got going and started hitting some home runs, they kind of let me play every day.
Right.
I think that's really excel. And then towards the end of the season, I had a small like injury, like a bruise on my hand, but my bat's kind of went down a little bit, but I was still swinging the bat really well. And I thought, like, I was just, it was my first year, and everybody always tells me that the first year in the league is the hardest, and I did well. So I was like, in my mind the whole time, I was going to come back. So I was just trying to get my work in to prepare for the next season.
Right.
Which obviously didn't happen. But I had a great time, and playing for the Dragons was one of, like, the highlights of my career so far, because it was, we had a great time.
Now, what did you find to be the hardest thing about playing in MPB?
More of, like, the spring training schedule and the practice schedule, which is all just basically your work, all your practice, everything will wear on you a little bit. But the hardest part was just getting to know the pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
From my point of view, as a hitter, I'm more of a guy that I swing better off guys than I've faced before. So it was more of like, once I got used to seeing everybody once or twice, because you play the same teams a lot.
Right.
At the beginning, everybody's brand new, so you have to get a kind of a feel for everybody. Then once I finally started facing, like, you know me, the rest of the guys, some hand shooting, and then you get your specialist out of the bullpen, and I finally get a couple of bats under my belt, it made it so much easier to play against them, because you can get a good feel of what they're going to do to you at the plate, and it makes it a lot easier to put together a really good at bat.
Right. Now, what about your life outside of baseball when you were living in Japan? How was that?
Oh, it's fine. That's one thing I always tell everybody. I'm like, man, you have your days off here and there, but Dragons especially, you don't have too much free time. So it's good because it keeps you busy, because you practice on your off days most of the time. Trinity is still one of the few teams that does do that.
Right.
And you're just at the ballpark all the time because that's just the Japanese way of life. You practice all day, you work hard, and you get back up, and you go right back to the ballpark and do it all over again.
Right.
It takes a little easier to transition for me, because I was by myself, and I was still dating my wife now, then, so it was like, we were always flip-flopping schedules. You know the time difference, how that can get, but the more busy I can stay, the less love you get, and it makes it that much easier just to focus on baseball.
Right, right. Now, like we were talking about, you had a fairly good season. Did they ever tell you what they were looking for and why they didn't bring you back the next year?
I never really got a straight answer, but I still keep in contact with, like, Araki from the Dragons. I saw him this year. As soon as he found out I signed, he, like, called me, and we went and had dinner and stuff. But I talked to my translator and a couple of front office people, and what happened? I guess what happened was the GM switched, and back to, I think it's Ochiai who's the GM now.
Exactly, yeah.
Not going to be the GM for much longer.
Not yet.
So that's what I'm kind of hoping is I can get back in with the Dragons next season, because the GM's going to go another direction. But he's more of like, he likes to sign a bunch of players, like 6 or 7 from either Dominican or somewhere like that, to try and fill out the roster rather than just how the Fighters do it or somebody else, where they just sign 4 guys and they just go with those guys.
Right, so right.
I think that's what it really came down to, was the GM didn't sign me the previous year, so he didn't want to re-sign me.
I see.
Was kind of disappointing, because I thought I was really found a home, and I was excited to really come back and put up some really good numbers, because as I've always seen, guys that got their second year in and got to play every day,
right,
really did well their second year.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Valentine or something like that. Like, their average is always a little down, but the power was still there. And then once they got back, it, like, everything kind of clicked a little bit better for them.
Right, right. I think Brandon Laird was a good example of a guy in his second year doing a little bit better. And then his team ends up winning the Japan Series in part because of his contributions.
Exactly.
So yeah, you're right.
Exactly. It's all part of, like, that winning mindset and having the manager that really can believe in you. That's, like, one of the biggest things that you can have, is have a manager, like, behind you the whole way through the whole season, no matter what. Because I know, like, Brandon, like you said, the manager, like, came out and, like, said it, that, like, he's our guy and we're going with him no matter what happens. I believe in him. And that, just right there, it gives you the confidence to just go out and do your job every day. It makes a world of difference.
Yeah, I try to tell some people that, you know, when you have a role and when you know what your position is and where your standing is on the team, you just go out and try to win games. You know, you don't have to worry about, man, I struck out and now they're going to take me out, or I can't strike out in this situation. I got to at least put the ball in play, because, you know, that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of things to be thinking about when you're up there. And a lot of baseball is mental, so it's a lot of distraction.
Oh, yeah. And that's a big thing there, is the manager has so much power over you that he can do whatever he wants without pretty much any consequence. Like, say you strike, it happened to me. I mean, it happens to all new players that go there. It's like, I struck out my first two at-bats, and I got taken out of the game. I was like, that's really not how, like, a guy like me plays, because I'm a power guy. Like, he can go 1-for-4. Like, I could have hit a home run in the ninth inning, or I could have went 2-for-4 in my last two at-bats. It's like they live in the manager lives such in the now, rather than seeing the whole perspective of the game, like what could actually happen in the ninth. And you end up running out of players, and then you get stuck, and you need your spot comes back in the order, and you would have hit in that clutch situation that could determine the game, and it makes a big difference.
Yep, yep. All right, well, then you didn't play in Japan for 2014 and 2015, and then you came and played with the Oryx organization last year, and you didn't get much of a chance there. But, of course, when I saw the signing, I just kind of blew up. I'm like, well, wait a minute. This is bizarre. This organization is weird. This is redundant. This is roster redundancy. They already have left-handed hitting guys who can play first base. What was the point here? And, you know, I kind of ranted on the show, and then, you know, you didn't get much of an opportunity. So what went on there?
Yeah, I mean, I was with Chicago Cubs in spring training, and they ended up having a prospect that was going to play in AAA. So I ended up asking for my release at the end of spring, and I was basically without a job for a couple weeks, and my agent's been calling around. I was like, man, I just want to go back to Japan. I love playing there. I feel like I'm at home there. Like, I don't have to deal with anything crazy with the prospects and this and that. Like, the best players play.
Right.
What I thought.
Right. Little did you know.
Little did I know that I was just going to get buried with Oryx, which seems so strange, because they gave me 25 on the bat, I think. And I hit a couple home runs, and I was just hitting my stride, like, just got a hit off of Connie, and it was really strange. And then they sent me down, and they never called me back up, and they ended up sending all the foreign players down, which was bizarre for me, for a team that was in last place in all aspects of the whole league, as in major league team, minor team. They came last in spring training. Like, why don't you give a couple of us a shot every day, and maybe we can help win some games so we don't end up in the cellar.
Right, right. I mean, like I said, it was roster redundancy. I didn't understand that move. And I looked, you know, we've been talking about of course, they've had a cleaning of house since, but, you know, we had the manager who didn't really seem like he was a front of the line guy. Well, what was he like, Fukuda, as a manager?
Fukuda, he seemed more like a yes man to me more than anything, and which I was like, okay, just stick it out, like, play hard. Maybe they'll bring it back next year and we can start this all over again. And then it seemed like then they extended the manager for another season, which is mind-blowing to me, especially in MLB, if you finish dead last, then you get a contract extension. But finish dead last and then you get your year extension, which makes zero sense, especially in that league. So I was like, okay, well, I'm probably definitely not coming back then, because this guy clearly doesn't like me or any of the foreign players that we did have. He was so, like, enamored with trying to play the young kids, which is fine by me when you're losing. But we didn't have to lose, because we had guys that were actually pretty good players that, given the opportunity, we could have actually helped them win.
Yeah, I mean, my line when this extension came out was, what did they see that they want more of, you know, in this guy?
Exactly. It's like, I think he's shown you everything he can do. Like, they need just like a whole overhaul of like someone with some good energy, because it's a very negative organization.
Mm-hmm.
From my dealings with them compared to most, like even the coaching staff is very negative, and no one's really, it didn't really seem like anybody was having a good time, which in Japan is, the coaches are supposed to be very stern and stuff like that, but at least most of them are pretty upbeat because they're former players. They like the game, which can keep you like motivated every day. But it just seemed like everybody was just very negative when I got there.
Yeah. I mean, you're going out and you're
the whole change.
Yeah, it's baseball every day. You should be enjoying it. And you know, like I said, bizarre. It seemed like the whole organization was misguided and just weird. And I looked at some of the players. I looked at the roster early on, and I said, well, this roster can compete. And I thought,
yeah,
no matter what, you know, unless they had a lot of extensive injuries, that this team was going to finish in the top three in the Pacific League, even though it's a difficult league to compete in. But I looked at the talent, and I said, well, the talent's there. So I was immensely disappointed. My reputation took a shot.
Yeah. You look at the pitching staff, great pitching staff, and great bullpen. Guys on that team, great believers, but it seemed like every time they all played scared, it was like, even Kaneko, he had a bad game. They actually sent him down for like a month or 6 weeks during the season, and he's their number one starter, like highest paid guy on the team.
Well, we were told it was an injury.
That's exactly what they would say, but I mean, he was throwing the whole time. He was down there.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he was taking a break or anything. It was just like, oh, you didn't pitch while you're going down. Like, just, you go through that as a team, and they don't really, well, that staff didn't really allow that to happen. Like, hey, okay, you had a bad game, see him next time, or, and I would try it. It was actually a good learning experience for me, because I got to play for one of the younger players that are kind of up and playing for them. They're actually like, they got some really good young players, and I just tell them, like, no matter what happens, like, do what you have to do to be successful. Don't let them grind you down and try and make you feel bad when you do something wrong. It's a learning experience. I'm like, you guys are 21 years old. Like, you're going to be playing this game for a long time. And that's one thing I can take away from, like, playing in Japan, and hopefully I get to come back soon. But it's like, I got to talk to these young players that are coming up, because they really loved hanging out with me and like talking to me, because I would like shoot them straight. I'm like, this is what you need to do, like, and they loved it, and I would love going out and hanging out with them, and it's a great experience to get to be down there with those younger players.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Well, what was the weirdest thing about that whole organization?
Man, it was just the way that they kept rotating guys in and out of the big leagues to minor leagues. Like, or they would keep guys up that weren't playing well, which was more of like a favorites game, which was really strange.
Yeah.
They had guys that just sat on the bench in the big leagues and hit 050 or 080. Like, what's going on? Like, at least if I'm up there, I could come off the bench and try and hit you a home run or something. Those guys aren't going to bring you much to the table. Like, and I think it was more, the manager controlled everything, even the GM, because then I'd like sat down with the GM a couple times to find out what was going on. They just come over and send them. Oh yeah, I called a couple meetings with the general manager.
And you were granted the audience with him.
Oh yeah, yeah. They I know how to go about it to where I can actually get to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't just like ignore me, which you just have to go through your right channels and do what you have to do. But I was able to sit down with him a couple times, and he couldn't really give me a straight answer, because he's like, the manager has control of the team, and which is so backwards in my thinking that the GM should be able to tell the manager whatever he wants.
I would agree with you. In fact, so, I would imagine that was his way of getting out of a tight situation.
Exactly. They were never able to give me a straight answer. I was like, I just want to show you guys that I can actually play here and do well, do you have any opportunity? And he's like, okay, I'll talk to the manager and see what we can do. I was like, because if not, then why am I here? Like, I don't want to be here and just practice in the minor leagues. And then towards the end of the season, they started cutting our playing time in the minor leagues. So I was like, well, I'm not just here to practice, and that's it. Like, you need to make a decision.
Right, right. Interesting. All right, well, let's get out of that dark time and talk about now. When you see, or what's your reaction to Japanese players when you hear they might be jumping to the major leagues, or you actually see them go to the major leagues, like Masahiro Tanaka? The 2013 season was the last one that he played in Japan, and then he went to the States. So what's your reaction when you see these guys make that jump?
Whenever I see them or get to see them come over, it's very refreshing to me because I know how good they are. And people are very skeptical, and I'm like, man, I faced Tanaka in 13. Like, this guy's no joke. Like, he's going to be good if he can stay healthy. So he's done really well. He's had a few bumps along the way because of injury bug, but he's played well. And I was with the Cubs last year in spring.
Okay, thanks a lot. It was good talking to you, Matt.
It was good, just sitting down. We shot the breeze a little bit before we did the interview. We talked a little bit after the interview. I had to listen to it twice to make sure that I got all the information that was on the interview, because we talked about so many things. I didn't want to tell listeners that, you know, I love when he said such and such and that he didn't say it on the interview, so I can check. But
come on, say it.
Yeah, I think, you know what? You know, Caroline Kennedy just left Japan the other day, and she was the U.S. ambassador to Japan.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking Matt might be able to take that spot over at some point after his playing days are done, because of the way he spoke about how he likes to treat the Japanese players in the States. So, you know, got a gig for you, man. You can get in. You can be in U.S. Foreign Service. I think that'd be great.
Well, that would be nice. I mean, I thought it was the number of things that Matt said were quite interesting, and I think a whole bunch of things. I was just rolling. I wasn't rolling on the floor because I was listening on the train.
Well, you can roll on some of the seats on the train and smash a couple old women and children and a couple.
What
old men.
Who do you think you are? What are you talking about? Give me a break. But you know, I was listening to it. I'm thinking, you know, first of all, you know what he said. You know, if you can adjust to the culture. That was interesting. I mean, that's normal. That's pretty routine. Everybody says that. So
right.
Sorry. No credit for that, Matt. Yeah. So just wait for your turn. You know, I thought it was interesting. Hang in there and you'll get a chance. And I understand that everybody gets through that. But in his case, it was sort of like, I think the interesting thing was, you know, hang in there. Everything's going to work out and you'll have a chance. But then the other thing was interesting is spring training. And more training and more practice and oh, it's great. You know, I don't have any free time. That's fine.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. He said, well, you know, I'd probably be lonely if I sat around thinking about how lonely I was. But with the Dragons, they don't give you any time to sit around and be alone. They're one of the few teams, he said, that practices all the time. So you don't really have a day off. And, yeah, I could understand that because if you're having a long-distance relationship, it actually, in a baseball player's schedule, it actually works out where you can wake up in the late morning or something and make calls, perhaps, and then you stay up late, and that makes it easy to make calls to the States, especially the West Coast. And he's a guy from my neck of the woods, from near San Bernardino. That's probably good for a long-distance relationship because it works out with the telephone calls, because on a baseball player's schedule, you probably get home late at night, and it's easy to make calls you know, to either the West Coast or the East Coast, because it's the evening or the morning or whatever. So that probably works out.
I guess. I mean, it was kind of an interesting, I was kind of surprised when he left, but obviously the way he said it was sort of like, it almost like nobody could agree whether they wanted him or not, or everything was kind of mixed up. And his whole point was sort of like confusing. It was quite weird. And yeah, that was interesting about the Dragons. And, you know, I never got a straight answer from them. I'm thinking, wow, how unusual. Everything in Chunichi is weird right now, because not only is not only is Oryx, excuse me, not only is Ochiai on the way
Don't
out.
Don't you confuse Oryx and Chunichi.
I know. Not only
bite
is
your
Chunichi,
tongue, Jim Allen, and chew it and swallow it.
I know. Well, my brain is a little flabby right now or something. I'm having trouble. With Ochiai in charge as general manager of the Dragons, it was very weird. Everything about that was weird.
Yes, it was.
And the owner of the Dragons basically said, "Look, Ochiai, you are a disaster." You know, he blamed Ochiai for everything that went wrong with the Dragons. And then, of course, he let his buddy manage the team. But, and here's the interesting thing, is that when I was at the MLB's baseball winter meetings, I ran into Denny Tomori.
Who's one of the pitching coaches or acting pitching coaches?
And now he's basically in charge of helping sign new players. And the guy whose job used to be to go to spend 6 weeks in the Dominican Republic talking to his contacts and watching players in the Winter League, basically Chunichi's saying that ain't your job no more. So the guy whose job was bringing in all the Dominican and Latin American players for the Dragons is now no longer that's no longer part of his role, supposedly.
So they're doing that Japanese company shuffle thing where they just move people for the heck of it.
Who knows? And I had a really nice chat with Denny Tomori, and he was like going, "Yeah, good luck." And I'm going, "Oh, good luck, you know. Hope this works out." He was really positive, and he was kind of fun to talk about, but he didn't really know what was going on in a lot of things. It was really interesting.
Well, I was impressed with Matt's ability to actually, because a lot of times if you want to talk to a GM on a team and you're a foreign player,
right,
it's going to take you a while. And he said he talked to the GM at Oryx, more than once. So multiple chats. And I was impressed that he figured out the channels to go through, and he was able to get a sit down with the GM. Now, he didn't say much about the answers he was getting.
Yeah, well, of course, that guy's gone too.
Right. But yeah, well, they cleaned house. So, I mean, you know.
Indeed.
I guess somebody with a vision came in and didn't envision seeing those guys in the future. So they're gone.
Yeah.
Which is good. But
the whole Pandora's box of working with Oryx was just interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you meet the people at the top of a goofed up organization, and I'm using goofed up, but I really want to say something else.
Well, yeah, wild. And
organization,
and...
I mean, it, you know, what does it matter? You know, and you heard him essentially describe the Oryx organization as something with a dark cloud over. I've never really heard anybody go out and say, "Well, yeah, we were playing baseball and yeah, they were losing, but I mean, you're still playing baseball for a living." So the guys enjoy the game. At least if they can't enjoy winning, they enjoy the game at least. And yeah, he just said the word negative. And
yeah, that's
pretty damning commentary about this club.
It is hard. Yeah. It was quite difficult. And I thought, personally, I like
Junichi Fukuda.
Junichi Fukuda, who's a player I really liked, you know, during his career, you know, who is re-signed, and it's sort of like nobody quite knows why. It's not a job that he struck me as something he really wanted to do in the first place, but he's sort of doing it and holding the place and being, you know, upholding the company honor or something. And I haven't found anybody who really has a good opinion of him as a manager.
He's a yes man, just like Matt said. If they said, "Hey, sign up, do this another year," he just said, "Yes, okay."
It's weird. I mean, he doesn't really want to do it, but he's doing it, and nobody knows why he's doing it, and it's just painful to watch. And I just don't understand anything the team's been doing. And of course, having said that, now they've got their new senior director is Shigetoshi Hasegawa.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so they've made changes, but I'm still looking at people in the organization and thinking it's kind of a, I don't know, backwards.
Look, at least they don't have the tug of war going on in the front office. Hopefully, that we know of. Maybe not yet. Not as bad. Or maybe they've already cleaned house, so they can start there. Hasegawa is a good person to have in because he knows the player's side and he's really smart.
Yeah, really smart. Well, I'm just afraid that basically they're going to wait for Sotoguchi to eventually, you know, blackmail him or somehow force him to be manager. Now that, you know, he wants to stay in Japan and his options to be a coach in Arizona are kind of done now that Tony La Russa's power is gone in Arizona and he wanted Taguchi to be a coach with the Arizona Diamondbacks, and that looks like it ain't going to happen, and so he's kind of stuck with Oryx. And you know, what are they going to do to bribe him to make him the manager?
A guy like that who has loyalty to organization, I think you don't have to bribe him too much because he's always going to be more comfortable here in Japan, and he's got ties to the team. But yeah, I was more happy that Matt agreed with me that team had a lot of talent. And he said, you know, really good pitching staff, and I just found it frustrating and bizarre that this team couldn't win more games, Matt not getting any. I mean, you remember when I said that, you know, roster redundancy? They're bringing a left-handed first baseman. Like, don't they have like 9 of those guys?
Yeah.
And they're bringing in Matt, and then he says, and then they sent all the foreigners down and didn't let them play him play on the farm. What, it's madness.
it's sort of like let's just pick set up
it's Yahtzee.
Artificial formulas for picking players at random, you know, and using Ouija boards or something to pick the players. One of the interesting things he said was his comment about dealing with the manager who has so much power.
Right.
I thought that was so big, and him talking about Brandon Laird and how much, you know, how important it was for the manager, and I know you stood for that and pointed it out how much Hideki Kuriyama was, you know, behind him and saying, you know, he's going to help our team and I'm behind him. And the whole talk about the, you know, the manager basically giving up on the player in a heartbeat, in a flash, in a snap of his fingers, and the holding the player's future in the palm of his hands and changing his opinion overnight, and it just drives me nuts to watch.
Yeah, I'm shocked that, I mean, you know, and I guess I didn't think about it, that it looks really bad on your resume if you say, yeah, I went to Japan and they dropped me down to the farm, and you don't have, he had 35 or 34 at-bats. I'm sorry, 34 plate appearances.
Right.
29 at-bats with the Oryx Buffaloes last year. That looks really bad, and so it makes it harder. It impacts, you know, there's a ripple effect that goes on. You can't get the next job because they're looking at your last job and thinking, well, you got fired. Well, you didn't really get fired, but it looks like you did. So
yeah, it is very really unfair. Weird. It is unfair, and it's petty, and everything to do with Oryx is unfair and petty. And there are teams that are going to help, and it's a fairly unprofessional. And one of the things, and I was thinking about this when I listened, and I was thinking about, you know, how can a manager, I mean, managers, it's a tough job being a manager.
It is.
But I was also thinking that, you know, one of the things about being a manager, one of the things a manager can do is to communicate really well with the players and be really honest with them, you know? This is what I need from you. And right now, I can't call you to do this job because of other things, but this is what I need you to do. When I think about Alex Ramirez, one of the things that he was able to do with the players, I mean, it's, you know, the players don't always meet the manager's expectations. But one of the things he does was communicate with the players and the coaches, you know, this is what we want to try and this is what we're working on. And it was very much simplified. And I think one of the things that that a lot of the managers have been able to do is to work and talk to the players. This is what we need you to do. Whereas with Oryx, it's almost like, quick, change what we're doing. We have no idea. Let's mix it up.
Yeah, well, I looked at Oryx, and I've been, for the past 2 years, I've been looking at them this way. It seems to me they don't have a long-term plan for anything. What they have is a daily plan. Yeah. Maybe. And the daily plan is to try to get something together so they can get a victory. And then they'll figure out what to do the next day. And if they have to bring up guys from the farm to help them carry out a plan for the next game, then they'll do that. But they don't have any long-term plans because they've had those two guys fighting, or at least two guys,
right,
in the front office. And they can't, you know, they can't decide what they want to do. So hopefully, at least what somebody like Hasegawa can do is set them on course to stick with a plan until they see that it's not working or that it is working, and then make adjustments. But there's just, you know, there's no process, there's no method. There's just guys, and they play Yahtzee every day, you know, throw the dice in the air and see what numbers come up.
Yeah, it's just pretty sad. Now, hopefully, and I mean, going back to Chunichi, of course, they're changing a lot, and I hope that they're going to have more luck, obviously, when Tanishige was the manager. He was in a case like, you know, he had one coach. Of all the coaches he had, there was one guy who he wanted. The rest were all being, you know, offered to him by the general manager.
Yeah, that was Saiki, right? Because he's the only one who got locked off.
Who got fired, exactly. So, so I'm thinking, yeah, there's lots of issues that are going on. And then when you see the teams, you know, it takes a while. It can take a while. Even, Alex Ramirez in Yokohama, he did not have a lot of control who the coaches were. But being Alex Ramirez meant, you know, what can we do to all pull together? You know, he really got in there and did quite an amazing job working with all the coaches. You know, what can we contribute together,
right,
kind of thing.
Right.
It was just amazing, his ability to communicate with people. And it was really impressive on that in that respect.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again, Matt. And obviously this conversation crumbled into this discussion about the Oryx and the terrible organization that it has been for a while here. But hopefully, the club will have a better season this year. And I'm not going to count on it. I think we've done our Pacific League prediction show, basically, at least the Oryx portion of the show.
Yeah, I just didn't see, you know, it's a mystery, some of the people they've had. You know, it was sort of like signing people because they could, but without part of the plan. And I think, you know, they've still got a lot of, you know, people on the team that they really don't know what to do with.
I don't think they know what to do with themselves. But anyway, I'm tired of talking about it. Let's move on. Let's make a one-seam. Let's throw one of those Sugano one-seamers and move to the Hall of Fame talk. And the latest inductees were announced on Monday, was it?
Or that's Tuesday? Correct.
That were announced on Monday, and we saw Seiichi Hoshino, the former Dragons or Fiery Dragons pitcher and even fierier as manager. I'm making up words. It's what I do.
That's all right.
We saw Tsutomu Ito, the former Lions catcher and Lions manager, inducted. Right. And then Masaji Hiramatsu, who pitched with the Taiyo Whales in Yokohama and is on Pro Yaku News maybe two or three nights a week. He's great on that show. He's really awesome.
And I've had very little. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay, well, anyway, so Hiramatsu is somebody I talked to after he was with the Salomura Award, and we had a nice time talking. I wish I had more chances to talk with him. But basically, the interesting thing at the meeting was that Tsutomu Ito gave away, you know, he went from getting 50% of the vote last year to becoming inducted into the Japan's Baseball Hall of Fame. Kazuyoshi Tatsunami got you know, he took a step forward, but he wasn't included. And here's the thing is, I was working and analyzing the field of players who are eligible to win in the hall, to win induction in the Hall of Fame. And mm-hmm. I have to think that one of the guy who probably had the best career of all the players who are currently on the ballot in terms of having a good career overall and also having the best value
right
in their best 10 years was Tuffy Rhodes. So the guy who is probably most qualified to be in the Hall of Fame was Tuffy Rhodes. Although having looked at it also, I think Tsutomu Ito was actually very good considering, you know, here's a guy who was basically filled his career with has the best catcher in the Pacific League year after year after year, gold glove year after year after year. So, you know, he didn't have the big, big, huge career.
Right.
But he was a great. I think he was certainly.
He was at a high level for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to compare him and say he wasn't worthy. So it was interesting, and I think he was well. But they just seem to have left Tuffy Rhodes right out of it, and I'm not keen on that.
Well, yeah, I'm not either, and you know that. But I'll tell you what I liked about it, and then I'll tell you where I stand on it. I really love the Hoshino pick because. He was not the most talented pitcher out there, but he was a fierce competitor and he worked really hard. And, you know, his numbers were a result of him working hard and having to work hard because he had to figure out what to do to beat those doggone Giants.
Well, he did. And I guess the other thing is that, you know, whereas Hiramatsu certainly deserved admittance to the Hall of Fame because of his pitching career. He was then a coach afterwards, but he was never a manager. But Hoshino was very successful as a manager. Basically, he took a team four times that failed. And within 2 to 3 years, he won a pennant with them. The Dragons twice, the Hanshin Tigers once, and the Rockton Eagles.
I read that he, you know, it was a total of 6 times that he went to the Japan series, either player or manager. And finally, you know, Ma-kun, Masahiro Tanaka, and the Eagles got him that championship in 2013. I thought it was really beautiful. And, you know, I liked him as a manager with the Dragons before they went into that dome. But he just seemed to have no clue how to manage that team once they went into the dome and had to use speed and different tactics to try to score runs. And I think he just kind of got lost. He thought he could be the same big banging team that they were in that tiny Nagoya Stadium facility.
Well, they were. Yeah, he was outmanaged in 1999. Of course, then when he was with the Hanshin Tigers, the other thing was he really outmanaged the same guy who was Sadahara Oh. And the interesting thing was that his team was just so inferior.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can have
the Daiei Hawks was just so much better.
Yeah.
And Oh really had no business even, you know, losing 3 games in that Japan series. But Oh was a pretty bad manager in the Japan series. And I love the guy, but that's just the truth.
Well, you've said that many times on the show. So.
Sure.
So, and I like in the press conference that all the guys had, they were really good. Ito's presser was really good. Mm. And then Hiramatsu just kept pinching his cheek. I think he pinched his cheek more than once, talking about how this is really a dream for him. And it was a really nice moment for him. I really enjoyed that. So those were the good things. But I was going to bring up the same two guys you talked about. It's amazing how great minds think alike. But I don't know why Kazuyoshi Tatsunami has to wait at all to get into the Hall of Fame. Here's a guy who started on the first team on the infield straight out of high school. He's the all-time doubles leader, and he's not in. And they didn't win a Japan series with him, but they did everything else. And then there's no Tuffy Rhodes. So I'm just going to boycott all kinds of talk about the Hall of Fame until those guys are in. Because
good luck.
There are other guys who probably could get in too. But I don't get it, and I don't like it, and I don't want to talk about it unless they're going to get those guys in there.
Well, the thing that was interesting to me was that, you know, I was looking at the guys who were ahead of him, and there were five players who weren't inducted into voted into the Hall of Fame who were ahead of Tuffy Rhodes, and three of them were position players. All of them won at least one Golden Glove.
So they're ripping Tuffy because of his defense?
Yeah. Well, geez, he only played center field. However, Tuffy also won seven Best Nine awards.
Seven.
The three position players, the five people who got more votes than he did, combined to win six.
Like I said, I don't want to even talk about it until he's in, because it's ridiculous.
Well, my fear is that basically the defense side and the three guys, the last three position players to get into the Hall of Fame, won between them 32 Golden Gloves. But the guys who got more votes are Tatsunami, and he had a long career. All the guys who are getting more votes than him, all the guys who are not in the Hall of Fame, who had more career value than Tuffy Rhodes, basically had more career value, and this concludes Tatsunami, they had more career value because they had longer careers. If you look at their best 10 years, the answer is pretty much nobody. Everybody who's in the Hall of Fame who was as good as Tuffy Rhodes was in his 10 years, in his best 10 years.
Right.
There's one guy who's out. And here's the thing about the Japanese Baseball Hall of Fame.
And the last they thing, really we're getting off this topic.
Yeah, they really don't talk about it. I mean, you know, I was talking, you know, what happened to Masayuki Kakifu? Oh, I don't know. We don't talk about that. You know, this is the guy who was between 1975 and 1986 was the best player in Japan.
Mm.
I mean, he was the outstanding player in Japan. It was an amazing player, and he was the guy whose best 10 years were better than Tuffy's, and he's not in the Hall of Fame. Why? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing. Let's move on.
Give me a break.
Let's throw a fastball. I'm tired of these seamers. Well, a four-seam fastball, I guess.
Okay.
Camp opens in a week from today, and I'm not going to get excited this year either. In fact, it was below freezing the other day, and jeez, there's snow cold, on the ground in a lot of places, and I just think it's silly. The guys are running around in all these, you know, freezing cold weather outfits, trying to show off that they're, you know, getting ready for the season. Some people went to Guam. I think some of the Giants people went to Guam. We've got
a lot of the Marines guys are working out in Okinawa.
Yeah, we've got all this stuff. But again, you know, we're gonna get guys in a bullpen counting their pitches, guys in a cage swinging, counting their swings and balls over the fences. That's not baseball. That's not even
how many
news.
Times, how many pitches did
it's not even news. Did, but, I know. But camp opens in a little more than a week. So
a little more than a week.
We've got that going. So anyway, let's go to fielding questions. All right, I'm excited for this one. Our buddy Glenn in Tokyo, he did what I ask people to do a lot of times, which is, you know, give us some feedback on just a comment, and you don't have to give us a question. And he did that. He says, first and foremost, Tuffy for the Hall, although my enthusiasm for the Japanese Hall of Fame and the ridiculous process whereby they do not choose foreign players has my energy for this at a similar level to John's. So good. Well, Thank you very much.
Well, I'll have to agree. When I was writing a story, I was thinking, okay, the defense maybe, and maybe we just have to consider the fact that he's not Japanese.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
thank you very much for that, Glenn. And then he says, secondly, just to put it out there in response to the Ohtani love fest you guys tend to bring to the table. He says, what do you think the drop-off is going to be on his actual numbers when he finally goes to MLB, especially with the bat? Now, what Glenn did was he attached a story of a guy who did a survey, or he tried to extrapolate from based on what Ohtani's numbers were, and then he looked at first year Japanese players who went to the States and looked at their first year, obviously.
Right.
I mean, come on now. My opinion on it is I didn't like the survey. I saw it when it came out. I think he did it earlier or maybe mid-year last year. I'm not even really sure. Actually, it was April. I'm looking it up right now. It was April. And he's got all these numbers, but he's got guys in the survey who you wouldn't even peg as potential power hitters. So I'm going to ask you, who are the guys you would consider power hitters, Jim, who went to the States, let's say, in the last 10 to 15 years?
Yeah. You mean besides Hideki Matsui?
Yeah, that's one.
There aren't any others.
Well, I think Kosuke Fukudomi was basically a power hitter before he went.
Yeah,
he
had some, sure, but yeah, I mean, Ichiro hit home runs before he went to America.
Well,
yeah.
I'm just saying, not a guy who hit home runs, but who was a power hitter in Japan?
Iwamura.
Yeah, Iwamura. So those are the three guys I have on my list.
Tadahito
okay?
Iguchi hit home runs before he went,
but
to
he wasn't
America.
A power hitter.
Well, I don't know. He was hitting when they fixed the ball in Fukuoka. He was hitting 30.
All right. Well, I have those three. We can throw Iguchi in there. And of course, those guys, when they go to the States, they're not going to hit the same. I mean, I expected Matsui to hit more home runs, and he just didn't. And that was weird to me. And I could almost see the problem. A lot of the problem was he was mostly a pull hitter, and they just didn't let him pull the ball. So that they made that adjustment on him. Now, I'm looking at Ohtani, and I never said what he might hit in terms of home run numbers. Did you?
No, I hadn't thought about it too much.
Yeah, I really hadn't thought about it. Ever said is I hope he gets a chance to do both. That's all I've ever said. I don't know if I said he was going to win 20 games as a pitcher and hit 20 home runs. I don't think I made that
his
statement.
His situation is so remarkable because you also have to realize that one of the, you know, and I say this all the time, so it's probably not that big of a surprise to anybody, but, you know, most of these guys who, by the time they go to the United States to play in MLB, most of them are 27, 28, 29. Hideki Matsui was 29 years old, and he wasn't used to seeing 95 mile an hour fastballs on a regular basis. You know,
right.
That was a once a year kind of thing. So that's a very tough adjustment to do when you're seeing pitching you never saw before in your life. The fact that he would hit 30 home runs, you know, after the age of 30, to me is amazing.
And think about this. Most guys, when they get up their first year in the major leagues, no matter where they come from, their first year in the major leagues is not going to be where their normal numbers are. They're usually lower.
Yeah. And I think Ohtani is a kind of, well, he's unique in a unique situation. I think people could he be better? I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he could make the adjustment.
Well, it wouldn't shock me either because I like Glenn. He keeps us grounded. You know, he's called us on a couple of things. He really got us on the Greek god of walks, Kevin Youkilis. We were talking him up, and he ended up getting injured and never playing another, never getting another swing. And I love that. I don't mind that at all. And I just didn't float, you know, any ideas of Ohtani being a Babe Ruth out there into the stratosphere. Although my expectations for him might be high when he goes and depending on where he goes. But my thing is with Ohtani, I mean, you know, we saw it this past year with Yoshitomo Tsutsugo, and he started driving a lot of balls the other way because where do pitchers pitch you when they're trying to diminish your power? They pitch you away. And so I knew, I think I even said it at some point, that I knew that Tsutsugo was going to hit. I think I tweeted it. That's what happened. Tsutsugo was working on his swing to left field because that's where a lot of people were going to pitch him because that's where they pitched him, I think, the year before. And as soon as Alex Ramirez got over there and said, hey, you realize they're pitching you on the outside of the plate, you're going to have to drive the ball out of the park the other way to get them to pitch you inside or come back over the plate. I think we've been seeing this a lot with Ohtani. We've just been marveling at his power to left center and center field and even left sometimes. But I think a lot of pitchers are just pitching him away. And as I mentioned before, he's got this, he's long. He's long and wiry, and it's hard to unwind and get that swing going. Mm-hmm. I don't think that his pull swing is bad. I don't think he's got bad mechanics at all. I think they're trying to diminish that power.
I think they pitched him a lot more inside than he had been.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a fear about that originally, and I think the more they pitched him, the more they thought, well, we have to work him inside because, you know, they tried the away thing, and that didn't really work very well.
Well, not when they missed. Started, not when they missed location, it didn't.
No. And, they tried low out of the zone, and they did, I think, the one of the things where they were successful is because he approaches hitting much more like a major league hitter in the sense that when he thinks he sees a fastball, he's very vulnerable to splitters
mm-hmm.
and taking big swings at pitches that aren't fastballs.
Yeah.
He takes it like a major league hitter. And I think that's where we see something like Hensley Mullins, the San Francisco Giants batting coach, saying he's one of the better hitters he's ever seen. Now, I don't know the details of that remark, but I did hear that from somebody who Mullins said it to, ostensibly. And I can see that because he's certainly he's a pretty rare case for a Japanese hitter to have a swing like that. And there are very few Japanese hitters who pull the ball as much as there's about five guys who pull the ball like they were major league hitters.
Yeah. Well, my whole thing is, you know, it depends on what park he goes to, what team he's with, and all those things. But I just think, you know, the other thing to remember is in Japan, there are no fastball counts. In Major League Baseball, there are normally fastball counts. So if he gets a chance to sit on fastballs, he might be a better hitter. We don't know.
I'm certainly in agreement with you. We don't know what's going on. I think he has the ability to make the adjustments. I think he brings a lot of interesting things, and it's going to be a lot of fun to follow how that goes a year from now.
Right. So Glenn, I mean, if you can quote us on a number that we gave, that we set out there, asking what the drop off might be, but he's not a huge winner of games in Japan, so I can't really make a guesstimate about what he might win in the States until he gets to a team and we see what's around him, because pitching is defense and defense is pitching.
Yeah, and also the other thing is, I mean, there's always that possibility that he could go to a team that wants him to be both a DH and he wants him to DH four times a week and pitch once a week.
Oh, the Detroit Tigers, they could use that.
Well, I think a lot of people could use it if they gave it some thought, but yeah. I don't, I think it could happen, but I think still the attitude is, this is the major leagues. We don't want to do that. We don't want to do anything new.
Yeah. All right. So, Love Fest, if it is, so I can't give you any numbers. I can't answer your question.
It was a great question.
It is a great question, and we will put it on hold until we know in 2018 or 19, whenever he decides to go over there, what team he's with, and then we'll start making predictions about numbers. How's that? We
Sounds
promise.
Good to me.
All right.
Well, John promises.
I promise.
Okay.
anyone else with a question, send it to ykyujohn@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter with the hashtag HighHeat @JBWPodcast. Send us MP3s. Glenn, we would love to hear your voice. I think I asked him about it once before, and he said he has a voice made for TV or something like that. The face is for radio, the voice is for TV. I don't know. I don't get it. But, MP3s, we accept those, and we'll just make sure they're less than a minute, and we'll play those. And, again, comments are welcome. You don't have to ask a question. Just make a comment, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Glenn. I want to thank everyone for listening and sticking with us.
All right, we will talk to you next time. Enjoy your baseball.
Ciao.